Case number 4, RBS Citizens against Sanyu Import, appeal number 113517. Mr. Leonard?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Bill Leonard. I'm standing in for Mr. Sia, counsel for the defendants in the case below and who also was on the brief. Mr. Sia is unavoidably detained in China and was not able to make it back for today's oral argument and contacted me last week and asked if I would step in.
Not detained by the government, we take it? Sure. Not detained by the government?
No, no. Was not able to come back in time. Tried to come up to speed on everything, and the case is in a an interesting posture from the standpoint of the appellant.
Lovely way to put it.
But the appeal was brought because there's been a miscarriage of justice towards Mr. Yang in particular, one of the defendants, along with Sanyo Import Company. The case was reduced to a question of whether bad faith was an affirmative defense under Illinois law at the point that the summary judgment motion was brought. It got to that point because motion to dismiss had been granted, which had denied all the other, or stricken all the other affirmative defenses and denied the counterclaims. One of the counterclaims had been entitled fraudulent conveyance, and yet the allegations of that counterclaim clearly was for fraudulent inducement. It had an inducement of a misrepresentation made by a representative of the bank, that the bank intended for Mr. Yang to rely on that representation, that he did rely on it when he signed the unlimited guarantee, and that he did it to his detriment.
So do we have any affidavit, any testimony in the record?
When the answer was filed, there were no exhibits attached to the answer. The court, they appeared before Judge Koukouras, and he pointed that out. And a week later or so, Mr. Sia filed 23 or 25 exhibits in four different parts there on the ECF. Included in those exhibits is the agreement that was signed contemporaneously with the same day as the three bank documents, plus an affidavit from one of the people who was...
But not from Yang.
Not from Yang.
And her affidavit, Ms. Ma, is it?
Ms. Ma.
Her affidavit really doesn't address the substance of Yang's defense. So... What can we do?
To my reading of it, it raises some serious questions because it talks about another transaction, another lawsuit pending in state court at the time, a chancery case brought by the same plaintiff, but just against Ma and Bai and not Mr. Yang. That case was ultimately voluntarily dismissed through an order that was attached as one of the exhibits in the complaint or to the answer. But it's never explained what that suit was about, and it was never explained why it was voluntarily dismissed. When you look at the court docket, which I did, and I don't have an affidavit, but Bai appeared voluntarily pro se, Ma was never served and did not appear. So I don't know how a voluntary dismissal was entered anyway. But how could it affect this case? Well, if that case dealt with the same piece of property that was supposed to be the collateral on this $100,000 loan, and the bank had notice of that because the bank's representative notarized that agreement that was written in Chinese and then subsequently translated. That agreement is in the record, and it was attached as an exhibit to the answer. She notarized it. She knew what the terms were. She knew that the $100,000 was going to be guaranteed, supposedly, by this house, and so Mr. Yang wasn't going to have any. These are the allegations, and there's no affidavit. There's case law that says that a court may deny summary judgment if the court concludes that a fuller factual development is necessary.
Was any motion filed by
by the defendants in order to seek that discovery?
No.
How would the judge have known then that a fuller record might have led to a different?
Well, it's clear from the two orders that were entered, the one granting the motion to dismiss in part and denying in part, and then the one granting the motion for summary judgment, that Judge Koukouras did read the exhibits because he cited to the agreement in both of them, the unidentified agreement, and he cited to it. So I don't know if he read all of them, but he read the exhibits, and that's to his credit. I believe the exhibits created factual questions that should have led to a belief on the court's part that a fuller factual development was necessary in order to understand what the dealings were between the bank representative and Mr. Yang and Mr. Bai and Ms. Ma, and whether there is any color to an argument that there was fraudulent inducement. Certainly was pled, but under fraudulent conveyance. The plaintiff saw that and responded in kind, as I think they should have. The whole fraudulent conveyance is under the Uniform Fraudulent Transfers Act, and doesn't apply here. It's right, it doesn't apply here. Fraudulent inducement was what was pled, and it just wasn't recognized by counsel. A fuller factual development might mean this case ends up in a summary setting anyway. I don't know. But I do know that on the exhibits that were filed and on the status that no discovery is done, the bank's representative's deposition was never taken. The bank's affidavit from the bank vice president never touches on what she knew, whether she was there. They even say, to the extent that the bank induced him to sign, it still doesn't fall under the Uniform Fraudulent Transfers Act. They don't address the allegations, and they didn't need to because of the way this was presented. But I guess, again, from our standpoint, fundamental fairness would militate towards reversing the grant and sending it back down to the district court and asking for the district court to just...
Saying he erred in what respect? What do we say Judge Koukouras did wrong?
That's a good question. If the standard of review on a motion for summary judgment is de novo...
De novo based upon the case as it's presented to the district court.
Yes. So we know that the judge read the exhibits because he cites to them in his order. They weren't properly. There was no 56.1 was not complied with. That's admitted. The question is whether the panel would conclude that a fuller factual development is necessary, and in that case, from a de novo review, I suppose, could order that Judge Koukouras should have, could have found the same way. It's a difficult case, Your Honors. I know that. But again, just trying to point out that the exhibits certainly raised questions that admittedly were not bright and crisp and sharp, that they need to be resolved. And so I'm not criticizing counsel or the district court judge, just saying that in this case, a fuller factual development would have been beneficial before a grant summary judgment was considered. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leonard. Mr. Shelton?
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. Tim Shelton on behalf of Plaintiff Appellee, RBS Citizens, DBA Charter 1. Question about further discovery. It was not requested, and there were plenty of opportunities to do so. That kind of goes without saying, but at the very beginning, the docket entries show that Judge Koukouras requested that the parties set down their discovery needs. That was never done. There was also a status hearing between the affirmative defense proceedings and the summary judgment proceedings, another perfect opportunity to request further discovery, which was not done. Also, is unclear what, defendants argued throughout their brief, they presented all of their evidence over and over and over again. I don't know what else there would have been presented, but what they did present was inadequate. If Ms. Chung, who is the the employee of Charter One did say that Mr. Yang would not be personally liable on this unlimited guarantee. That is parole evidence, and it's not admissible to contradict the terms of this agreement. It also hinges on collateral that was introduced to or put forth allegedly. And that also is precluded by the guarantee, the agreement itself. The unlimited guarantee says this will not be subject to any modifications of any kind, including security put up for this. So even if and Judge Koukouras considered those pieces of evidence when saying even if the affirmative defense was not rejected, the evidence was not strong enough to defeat summary judgment for those reasons.
But the fact remains that we don't have an affidavit from Mr. Yang saying that Ms. Chung said these things to him.
Exactly. And I think Li Ma's affidavit is very, very vague. Trial court called it conclusory. It does not refer to any of the details, as I think you said, of the substantive details of what had happened at this meeting or in the past. It doesn't refer to even whether the two loans on the same collateral were from the same bank, from Charter One. It doesn't say whether they were, basically that, who the loans were from. The notarization of this agreement by Ms. Chung is questionable. It's just a card attached on a separate page in the exhibit. There's no actual notary stamp or anything, as I recall, in the exhibit. Again, would not matter because it's parole evidence separate from the binding agreement. And they freely entered into two agreements that I think we do come down basically to the unlimited guarantee because most all of the allegations in the end switch to Mr. Yang and they don't involve so much the demand note, but the demand note was there too and that was collectible at any time whenever Charter One wanted it. The unlimited guarantee made the guarantor severally and jointly liable for any amounts on the note, and there's no evidence that there was any inducement or fraud involved. And as counsel admits, that was not raised below in a way to be responded to, but I think I've already just responded to it here anyway by saying that whatever evidence they had for this fraudulent inducement was not admissible or it had to do with collateral, which was barred by the unlimited guarantee itself. I don't think there was unfairness involved here, too. I want to quickly say the burden they imply in the brief that the burden shifted somehow to the non-movement, and it was error to decide the affirmative defense and the summary judgment in the same single proceeding. But it didn't. The burden always really was on defendants. It was their burden to prove the affirmative defense and to counter the motion for summary judgment once Charter One presented evidence that all elements of a breach of contract were met, and including the evidence of these ironclad agreements. Are there any questions or thoughts? No. Okay, we just request that you affirm the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Sheldon. Rebuttal, Mr. Leonard?
The question about parole evidence is not applicable here. We're not the evidence and the documents that were attached.
Because there's no affidavit.
Well, there was no affidavit, but we're not trying to contradict the terms of the three bank documents. We're trying to say that fraudulent inducement makes an otherwise enforceable agreement or obligation voidable at the option of the obligor under Illinois law. So if there was proof of fraudulent inducement, Mr. Yang would have the right to void the unlimited guarantee, and it would not be enforceable against him. So we're not trying to bring parole evidence. As to the question of Ms. Chung's notarizing the agreement, it is part of Exhibit 19 filed by Mr. Sia. It's not on the English translation, but on the original Chinese version, you can see her notary stamp right there with her name and everything. So it's on the original agreement in Chinese, which is the one that the Chinese parties signed, which before it was later translated. The only other question
thank
is...
Thank you, Mr. Leonard.
One other question.
Thank you. Case is taken under advisement. And